All right. Welcome to the Dad the Best I Can podcast. Today we are lucky to be joined by Ted Alexandro. Ted is a stand-up comedian. He is a husband. And of course, the reason he's on the show, he is a dad. How are you doing today, Ted?
I'm good, Rob. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, appreciate you being on. I heard you actually on one of my other favorite new podcasts. Joe List has a Mindful Metal Jacket.
Yes.
And that was, you really discover new comedians, and I know you've been doing it a long time, but like hearing a different side was really, it really resonated. So that was an awesome appearance you did.
Oh, thanks. I love Joe. We've been friends a long time. So yeah, he just started up, I think somewhat recently, I think this year, started that Mindful Metal Jacket, and it's kind of cool because it explores mental health and wellness and, you know, things that people don't necessarily associate with comedians.
Yeah. And now as a dad, so how old are your kids now?
I have one son who will be one on Christmas Day.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Planned.
That's right. That's right. And then we have a second coming in April, supposedly on 420. So we'll see how we decide to celebrate.
Man, how is it? What is it like? I always had this kind of conflict relating to my single friends without kids. Have you noticed that? I mean, you're only a year in, but is it different talking to your, especially comedians and a lot of these guys that keep completely different schedules and lives? Have you noticed a big change?
Well, I would say no for two reasons. One being the pandemic that we hardly see anyone. You know, so that's kind of cut down on any interactions, much less, you know, talking about the kids or whatever. But the second thing would be that a lot of comedians recently have had kids. I know of like four or five off the top of my head that all within a span of a year, you know, guys like John Fish, Gary Veeder, Rachel Feinstein, Noah Gardenswartz. Yeah, so just a whole bunch of us all had kids at the same time, which is good because then we kind of compare notes, you know, at least via Zoom or a phone call or a text.
Are you? You must be mining some good comedy out of it. I don't know if you've got a. He's only one, so you probably got a lot of years to build. But have you added that to the show yet?
Well, you know what's interesting is my last two specials kind of chronicled the pregnancy and then just like the leading up to the birth or the actual birth. So so Senior Class of Earth and Cut Up were my last two specials, and they both talked about I guess actually first like the marriage and then getting pregnant and then leading right up to our son's birth. So yeah, it's definitely worked its way in. You can't help, you know, I've been doing it about 28 years. So you can't help like whatever is going on in your life is going to find its way in. And yeah, it's fun. It's actually fun because for a long time, I was really thought of by the people who knew me as kind of the single guy comedian. In fact, I celebrated it. One of my other albums was called I Did It because of a joke that I said, you know, I'm 42, I'm single, never married, no kids. I did it. I made it to the maze. But now, you know, I'm on the other side. So I guess I did it in another way.
Yeah. I love you do a bit about, there's a age difference with your wife, right? You've got some great, great jokes about that. Yeah. Tell us that one, everybody out there that's listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a bunch of stuff about, the age difference and how, you know, obviously we're two adults, so it's not a big deal, but if I took her to my, high school prom, I would have been pushing her in a stroller. So then, you know, I do a joke where I talk about that and I start singing, what is that song? Don't Dream It's Over. Hey now, don't dream it. Rocking a baby at my prom. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, I think that one was in Senior Class of Earth. Yeah.
So you are the older one of the two. I think that was the joke that crushed me. I was like, yeah, she's, you're how old? 10,
that's right. I'm 51. Yeah. So I it's been so long since I've done stand-up that you're reminding me of my act.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a joke where I say my wife and I have an 18-year age difference between us. My wife is 69 years old. You know, I didn't know. Of course she's 33.
Yeah.
I'm progressive, but I'm not that progressive.
I love it. I love it. So now I'm seeing you're everywhere now. Has this been a big change? We'll talk about how you got into stand-up comedy, but this world we're in your studio now, essentially, I was watching you on YouTube. You're everywhere. Is this just a complete different experience being a comedian in 2020 than it was a year ago?
In a lot of ways it is. In other ways, it's kind of just shifting focus, you know, because I was doing a podcast for the last few years that was strictly an audio podcast. But then with the pandemic, it really kind of eliminated any other excuses I had, because I had been intending to make it a video podcast for so long. But I was like, all right, now's the time. I can't put it off any longer. So yeah, I've been doing the Ted Alexandro show on my YouTube channel. So that's been great. You know, I've been interviewing all sorts of people, comedians primarily, but also, you know, some people from the world of politics. I have a politician, Zephyr Teachout, coming on tonight. She ran against Andrew Cuomo in, I think it was the last governor's election. Yeah. So she's like a really fascinating person that I got to be friends with. Weirdly enough, we were on the same episode of Larry Wilmore's show, The Nightly Show. And, you know, we just kind of became friends. And then we've done a couple things together since. So she's going to be on my show tonight. So, but it is primarily, you know, talking about what's going on in the world. And then typically I'll interview a comedian, you know, later in the show.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, we're consuming so much more of this content now on YouTube, podcasts, and everything. And I mean, I've always been obsessed with stand-up comedians, but I think only recently were you really able to hear, you know, kind of this other side of them, their other opinions. You know, they are regular people, they're dads and stuff like that. So it's a neat, like, kind of inside look, and it really, I think, connects you with your audience. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, you know, it's weird because in a lot of ways I was almost late to the party as far as podcasting. So I had this podcast called A Little Bit Me for a little over 2 years. And then, like I said, I started up the Ted Alexandro show, which is essentially the same thing, but just with the video component. But like you say, it does kind of allow you to show other sides of yourself. And in a lot of ways, it's sides of myself that I really kind of compartmentalized and kept private. Like, I was pretty much the type that would, you know, not that I like hid my life on stage. I was pretty transparent about talking about whatever was going on in my life on stage, but not in like a podcast form, at least my own podcast. I would go on a bunch of them. But so I kind of finally realized the value of what you're talking about, just having that relationship with people where, you know, just in a little bit more of a conversational, informal setting, you're letting people into your life and into, you know, what's on your mind.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought about that? I mean, I'd hear your thoughts on, so we are kind of like all putting ourselves out there, it seems like, more than ever before. Now you have one son, another one on the way. Have you thought about what it's going to be like for them growing up? How comfortable are you in encouraging them to put themselves out there? Or maybe really feel, I have conflicted feelings about it. It's like, am I using my kids as content? You see a lot of that out there, but at the same time, it is your life. You know, people do want to see it. Do you and your friends talk a lot about that?
No, that's a good point. You know, not necessarily that I talk about that with my friends, but I do talk about that with my wife a lot. You know, like, even when we had our son, I didn't want it to just be, you know, content for social media. So I think I've probably put out, you know, less than 5 photos in, you know, coming up on 1 year of his life. Because on the one hand, you do want to share, you know, somebody that's so important in your life and kind of document the stages of him growing and all of that. And also, you know, because a lot of my family and friends follow me on social media as well. So it's an easier way to show them. But it does complicate it because I've got, you know, all these other people who I don't know who are following me. So, you know, it is a balancing act, and it's such a weird world where, like you say, we're putting ourselves out there. Everyone is, it seems, podcasting or doing some sort of freelance work where you kind of have to have some social media presence. Everybody's kind of hustling for, you know, for this gig economy, I guess, for lack of a better term. So you are the product, right? You know, and in stand-up, we're used to that. But yeah, it kind of, it permeates a lot of phases of life. But to your question, I don't know how I'm going to handle that as a parent, you know? Like, we just watched The Social Network, where all of these tech people talked about, the people who literally came up with the technology, talk about how they don't allow their kids any phone time or any screen time. So that's kind of telling. So yeah, you know, I mean, we kind of tell ourselves that we're going to be very mindful about if or when they can use it. But I hope that's the case. You know, some of it almost feels like a freight train that, you know, it's out of your control. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think having some awareness of it is helpful, but also sometimes I am envious of the people that they don't even think and they're just putting everything out there. But I guess that is the problem with self-awareness. You work through everything constantly and always have, you know, there's two sides to every coin for sure.
Right. I think everyone's different to how it resonates with you. And, you know, if it feels out of whack, then you have to, you know, kind of accommodate.
Yeah. So tell us, I'm always fascinated by how people get into stand-up comedy. You said you've been doing it now for almost 30 years. You started in New York City. You were just going up to open mics. How does, what is the Ted Alexandro origin story?
Well, you know, I had done a lot of acting in high school and college. So theater was really my introduction to being on stage and that whole world of performing. And I felt very comfortable in it and enjoyed it all through high school, college. But I honestly didn't think like, oh, this is going to be my career. I just thought like, this is a fun thing that I love to do. But how do you make a career out of this, you know, or am I going to study acting? Like, to me, it almost felt like, I don't know, it felt frivolous. So I wound up studying music, which I don't know if that's any less frivolous, so I studied jazz piano for my first few years, but kind of quickly realized that I wasn't as good as the students I was studying with. There was a lot of like really world-class talent and I felt kind of, you know, in over my head. So as hard as I worked, it just wasn't the right fit. So then I switched and got a teaching degree. But while I was doing that, I started kind of just going out for, they had an improv, like sketch comedy group. And I befriended the guy who founded that group, and we became best friends. So by the time I graduated, he and I started going out to open mics in New York City, my friend Hollis James and I. And we started just, you know, going to every stage we could find all around New York City, all around New Jersey, Long Island, anywhere we could find a stage, we would go. So that was a good kind of entree to the clubs and to just that whole kind of ecosystem of stand-up comedy in New York City and the surrounding areas. So he and I did that two-man thing for, I guess, a little less than 2 years. And then more and more, I was kind of feeling the impulse to try it on my own. So that was when, you know, a couple of years in, I started doing that.
Yeah. And what was your, so you're a one of five. Is that what you said? Siblings?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the second oldest of five. I have two brothers and two sisters and I'm the second.
What is your parents' reaction when you say, I want to go into acting, I want to go into comedy? Are they supportive?
Yeah, you know, my parents, to their credit, have always been very supportive of whatever we wanted to do. At least, you know, in my experience, I don't know if you asked my other siblings if they would give you a different answer, but I don't think so. In my experience, I think they always saw how determined I was. So, like, whatever I was doing, I was intent on figuring it out. So even though, like, say jazz piano didn't work out, like, they didn't, you know, question it or try to dissuade me. They let me do it. And then they, you know, they were always very helpful when it came time and there was a fork in the road. I knew that I could go to them too and say, like, you know, I'm having trouble with this or that. So yeah, same with stand-up comedy. Maybe it softened the blow a little bit, if calling it a blow is even the right terminology, but I was teaching during the day. So, you know, I got my teaching degree. So I was teaching music in New York City, K through five, for about 5 years when I got out of college. While I was you know, starting to pursue stand-up comedy. So maybe they saw like, okay, he's got a job, you know, he's paying the bills. So I think, you know, it wasn't like I dove in immediately and dropped everything. It took about 5 years and then I got out of teaching because mm-hmm. I was starting to make a living in comedy.
Yeah. And I think I heard, I don't know if it was on your podcast or somewhere, you were telling a story of your parents and your dad and how his career, I guess, was as an accountant and how he kind of made a turn. Share that story with us and how that might have modeled or was influential to you.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably about my son's age now. I was probably just an infant, but my father was in accounting and I guess was at a point where he had a job opportunity in Chicago with an accounting firm. So, you know, I was born in New York and my parents were both from New York. So, you know, it kind of looked as though it was a done deal. Like they took a flight out to the suburbs of Chicago and, you know, the firm kind of wined and dined them and showed them what, you know, what life would look like and where they would live and all this kind of stuff. And I think on the flight home, my dad said, I don't want to be an accountant and I don't want to live in Chicago. I want to be a teacher and I want to live in New York. And my mom said, okay, let's do that. So, yeah, you know, that story I think was impactful for me in terms of just that feeling. And I think we've all felt it in our lives, just that moment of dread, like this is everything in me is saying, I don't want to do this. This is not who I am. This is not what I want to be. So, you know, hearing that story about my father, I think, you know, made an impact that it gives you permission to honor those feelings and to say like, you know, it's not a mistake when you're feeling that way. It's for a reason, you know, and I think having a partner as my dad did with my mom, having a partner who helps you through that and helps you honor those impulses and says, okay, let's figure out, you know, what we're going to do. That's important too.
Yeah, that is powerful. And I imagine, especially with five kids, you saw a lot more of your dad. He was probably a lot more available than he would have been had he maybe gone for the money and you guys moved to Chicago. Is that, you know, was that, do you think, a big priority for him? Or was he like, you know, five kids running around the house? Like now as dads, we can look at it from a totally different perspective. We're like, sometimes you do want to just run out the door and get out of the house. But it seemed like he was making a commitment to really be around the family.
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it, you know, although I think at that point there were just two of us. It was my older brother and I, if I'm not mistaken. But I do think that just the overall look of life and you know, what that would afford him in terms of being around more and, you know, maybe coaching our teams and doing these types of things, that probably factored in. And interestingly, my younger brother, Dave, you know, he kind of followed a similar path in that he was in engineering and did that for, I guess, about 5 years or so and was making good money, you know, and doing all this kind of stuff. But then he, when he got married, shifted and also became a teacher and a coach, you know, coached high school volleyball and taught high school. And so I do think that my dad's influence probably informed a lot of our decisions and our path and that ability to assess, you know, when it's time to make a change and also to prioritize family. I think that that's definitely something that I've learned. And I think all of my siblings have learned from both of my parents is, you know, a strong family is, it doesn't happen by accident. It happens by really prioritizing family in all of your decisions. And then over time, you see the cumulative effect of that on all of the lives involved.
Absolutely. That is one of the big things, especially when you have really young kids. A lot of it can feel thankless at times, but it is kind of this, it is a long-term investment. You know, I can't imagine how great it is going to feel when you have kids, you know, teenagers that all want to hang out and come to your house for the holidays and that kind of thing. So it, in the beginning, you really are having to kind of prioritize everybody else, prioritize the family. But overall, I think that bears fruit as your family has shown you.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, it is that in the moment, it can be frustrating. You know, like I have like five things that at all times, as I'm sure you do and most parents do, that I want to be doing, that I kind of need to get to. But then your kid comes up and, you know, just wants to play or whatever. And, you know, you make time for those little moments. And you just have a different concept of time, and you have a different concept of, you know, like a long-term, like everything will get done, but it's not going to be, maybe on the schedule that you expected.
Which is, I think, harder than ever today in this world of just instant gratification and our phones and attention. And, you know, even your comedy style, I see you do have kind of a really calm, slow delivery and everything. So I imagine that carries over into your parenting and your real life as well. But I do think parents especially, there's so much going on and we're just constantly distracted that finding time to kind of slow down. And for me, I know I have to put the phone in the other room or else I'm constantly checking it. So it is new challenges, I think, for parents today.
Yeah, I agree. Like for me, I try to, especially like when I first wake up with my son, because usually with my wife being pregnant now, I'll try to take him and for the first hour or so she can get some, because she's been up feeding him all night. So I take those first couple hours and wake up with him. But I make it a point to leave the phone in the other room or not have it in my hand. Or if, you know, like sometimes I'll put, like lately I've been putting Christmas music on, but then I just put the phone in the corner so that I'm not tempted to do other things. But yeah, like you say, it is that constant pull if it's around, but it's almost like, sometimes I think to myself, if there were a hidden camera, like it would be embarrassing to see yourself like with your kid kind of vying for your attention. And, you know, I'm scrolling, or I'm like, you know, even if it is something important, if it's an email or whatever, just the visual of seeing yourself ignoring, because you're kind of in this trance of looking at, you know, the device. Yeah, it's something that requires constant work and attention, you know, and kind of like a philosophy, because otherwise, like I said, it can get away from you.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that too. I'll be at the playground and I'm judging a parent that's pushing a swing with this, you know, looking at his phone, and then I'm doing the same thing. And I mean, your kid is still a little young, but that moment when he says, "Put your phone down, daddy," it's like it does hit you and you're kind of like, God, this is not healthy, and you just need to kind of check yourself. I did, actually, I went to play. I've got three. I've got an 8, 6, and 3-year-old. So I am up in the circus right now.
Yeah, man.
My kids they've been watching some YouTube videos. It's a whole new world, which I'm just now starting to understand of, you know, you should see what the kids are watching today. It's crazy and how obsessed they are with these YouTubers. But I said, you know what, if you guys want, I'm going to go play with the 3-year-old. And I gave my 8 and 6-year-old my phone. And I said, why don't you guys make a video and actually create something? And I'm in the other room with the door shut and they're cracking each other up. And it was like it was a neat way where they're actually not just consuming all the time, because you do like that creative aspect of it. So we'll see how far we go with it. But it was a neat thing to kind of hear them playing together and see them actually like creating something, as opposed to just, you know, being in that trance that you talked about.
Yeah. And you never know. I mean, I had the plumber come to our house the other day and we were just making chit chat. And he told me that his sons are like YouTubers. And I'm kind of like, oh, that's cool, whatever. And they have this channel, Mr. Beast, I think it's called, that is like enormous. They're like one of the top YouTubers. I mentioned it to my teen nephews and they're all like, oh yeah, Mr. Everybody, yeah. You know, so like you say, like, first of all, that everybody's got a channel, everybody's creating content, but yeah, you never know where it's going to go either. But yeah, it is a kind of a thing of, you want to encourage creative impulses in a healthy way. But it does seem like there's so many minds now, you know, for parents and for kids. There's so many different minds of things that could just be unhealthy behaviors or just obsessions even.
Yeah. I don't know if your plumber was messing with you, Ted, but Mr. Beast, this is who my kids are obsessed with.
Is that right?
He is the Dave Chappelle, maybe times 10 on YouTube. That, I mean, enormous. I actually watched a video which kind of got me to encourage to give them the phone, where a guy broke down how much he makes and the whole production, and whatever number you could think it is, multiply it by like 20, because my mind was absolutely blown. And seeing the, you know, again, seeing the business aspect of it and seeing like how they're, you know, they're producing content. It's not just the dumb 15-minute clip you see on TV. So
right.
It really gives you a new appreciation. I think seeing that video, and I mean, this kid's 22 years old, and yes, he has a multi-million dollar business, but like the, you know, he is, and I actually heard they were interviewing his business manager, and they were saying, is this guy the next, you know, Tom Cruise or actor or whatever? And he said, they're not even, people don't understand how big these guys are, that they're not the next big star. They are the next Disney, or they're the next, they're like a brand now. So it's really incredible how media is changing and the way we're consuming it, and the opportunities for people that, you know, there's just no gates anymore. Anybody can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I felt old immediately. First of all, that my teen nephews knew me. They're like, yeah, of course, everybody knows Mr. Beast. But then also that I didn't even get it. I don't even get, like, yeah. I watched a couple of videos, and I think it combines like challenges with, they give people prizes and stuff. But I felt like, you know, like the 50-year-old listening to someone's new rock and roll, like, I'm like, what is this? Yeah. You know, like, I didn't understand. But like you said, the thing I did get is that it's enormous, and that, like you say, it is like not just the next big thing. It is the big thing right now, and yeah, these guys are poised to you know, to do whatever they really want to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny too. Your kids imitating it. My 8 and 6-year-old are like, smash that like button. They've got no channel. They're just making a video for themselves, but they're so excited about it. I mean, it was really it kind of has changed my mind. I'm not sure if I'm willing to give them their own YouTube like they're asking for, but like it got me excited seeing them, you know, being excited about something that's not just this, let me watch somebody sit in a block of ice for 24 hours and throw $2 million at each other. I was like, how is this entertaining? But
right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so it's strange. Yeah. You know, and speaking to my plumber too, like you said, at first I kind of was dismissive of it, but then I quickly grasped that, you know, yeah, this guy, you know, maybe I'll get a job with the plumber and his kids.
Oh, yeah. You should be a guest. My kids would be obsessed with it. Or you should just change your studio to like a block of ice and say, you're going to give your 10,000th subscriber $500 if he watches you just sit on this thing.
Whatever it takes, man. I'll do it.
Yeah. So we talked about your dad as a dad now, and we kind of mentioned before, I see my parents in a completely different perspective now having kids. Is there one thing that you learned from your dad, or one memory that you find yourself maybe applying as a dad now?
Well, the first thing that stands out is just the kind of, just, you know, how baffled I am that they were able to raise 5 kids on a teacher's salary. You know, all 5 of us went to college, all 5 of us are functioning, contributing adults, and all, you know, love each other. So that just, yeah, just the fact that they, I guess the decision that was made in the story that you brought up earlier, really bore fruit in a lot of different ways. But the main thing that I think about when I think about my dad is just a gentle presence, you know, maybe in a world that kind of perpetuates a lot of aggressive kind of models of masculinity. Even though he's a big guy, he's like 6'3", he's a gentle soul, you know. So I think that impacted me as well. Always kind to everyone. So yeah, that I think is a baseline kind of thing that I definitely respect and try to model, you know, myself.
Yeah, and now you are older and wiser, at least in theory. I'm sure we all feel like I'm still, you know, 32 years old. Do you find it different or challenging? I'm sure your dad was much younger when he had kids. Being how old are you now? 51, you said?
51, yeah.
Yeah. Do you find that, or is that just, you know, feel normal to you to have, you know, a 1-year-old and one on the way?
Well, when you compare, it's very bizarre, you know, because my parents were married. I think my mom was 21 and my dad was 23, 24. And, you know, by the time they had us, they were 20, you know, by the time they had me, maybe 27. So yeah, that's bizarre when you compare. But as far as like my own life, I don't have anything to compare it to. So it just feels like the most natural thing in the world. Like this little boy who's, you know, running around and playing and, smiles at me when he wakes up, you know, it's very natural and fun and beautiful. And the pandemic has allowed for that to be every day, you know, which is another great side effect, despite the chaos of the pandemic. Yeah, that's been a welcome silver lining.
Yeah, it really has, I think, in a lot of ways. Create, you know, there is the media consumption, it'll drive us absolutely bananas. But, you know, if we step back and look, in 2020, in a lot of ways, has been a great year. You know, a lot of great things have come out of it for me personally, and I'm sure a lot of people, we just kind of tend to look at the negative. But I think, you know, the kids will keep you young. Their memories are, you know, 5 seconds and they're on to the next thing. So I find that helpful.
Yeah. And it's weird in a way that it's kind of the antidote to all of the things that we complain about all the time anyway, that we don't have time to just slow down and detach. And, you know, everything is all about work and, you know, going here, and especially for comedians, because we physically have to fly to wherever we're going. But yeah, this has been an opportunity to slow down the pace of life and to kind of reconnect with a lot of the things that we were saying and focus on the most important relationships. So yeah, for me, it definitely has been overwhelmingly positive to have this year, especially the first year of my son's life, to be with him and my wife. And just, you know, although, like you say, it's at times it's challenging, and at times it's like you need to have your own space and do your own thing. So we try to be aware of that as well. But overall, it's been great to be together during this time.
Yeah, and that is you'll think back. I mean, his first year of his life, 2020, not that everything is going to be changed in 2021, but that will be, you know, quite a story. Hopefully he'll look back with you in 20 years and say, oh, you didn't know you were crawling around with a mask on when you were 1 year old.
Yeah, it is going to be weird to think back on this time. Yeah, I'm glad he's blissfully unaware right now, just trying to get to the staircase every chance he gets. You know, he's trying to crawl up the staircase.
That's the way to be. Ted, on the Dad the Best I Can podcast, I like to do some fun rapid fire questions. Can I hit you with a few?
Please.
All right, Ted Alexandro, what was your first car?
First car was actually my brother and I shared custody, if that's the right word, ownership. One of our best friend's dad was selling this old Chevy Impala. And so my brother and I bought it, and it died, I think, within 6 months, but like, we were happy to have a car.
What was your first job?
Burger King. I worked at Burger King in my neighborhood for a couple of years. It was a good job. You'd see how many Whoppers you could pile onto a bun and get at it.
This might be the same answer, but what is your favorite meal to eat for dinner?
No, it's no longer that. I've left that in the rearview mirror. But my favorite meal now is it's the opposite, if that's the right word. My wife and I like to have pasta with like a vegan sausage, field roast vegan sausage. I'm not employed by them. I just like that brand.
What is your favorite dramatic movie of all time? Or you can go top five if you need to, like just one that sticks out.
I always, of course, remember The Godfather. That one just has so many great actors and so many great performances. Yeah, let's just leave it there.
How about comedy movie?
Man, there's so many classics. Caddyshack comes to mind just because it was such a touchstone of my coming of age years. I mean, you can't do better than Bill Murray, Rodney Dangerfield, Chevy Chase. That whole cast was great.
Who would you say is your biggest influence, a stand-up comedian that influenced you the most?
Well, you know, coming up through New York, was a real gift because you get to watch the very best night after night. So it's funny because comedians would say to me like, wow, like how did you start in New York? Like, you know, like how can you start in the place where everyone is? But in essence, it was like you were in class every night. So you would watch guys like Chappelle and Dave Attell, you name it. John Stewart, everyone was there. Todd Barry, Colin Quinn. So those were people, I was in that ecosystem and just watching the best, you know, just great comedians night after night. And as far as like, even like before I became a comedian myself, I would say the people that really impacted me would be people like George Carlin, Jerry Seinfeld, because his show was so big when I was in college and into my, I guess, 20s and 30s. Yeah, just people that were doing it well, who I could observe and kind of learn from. But even when I was a kid, you know, like my parents had great albums like Flip Wilson and all the old Cosby albums and stuff like that. So, you know, there's always a lot to learn from. If I had to pick one, probably Carlin.
Yeah. That's really cool too. When you talk about, these are your peers. You were almost like playing with, you know, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and you're in the league with all of them. I can't imagine how neat that is to see like your own friends really just rise up along with you.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, you know, I've toured with a lot of these guys too. Like Jim Gaffigan, I've toured with for the last 6 years or so. And he and I have played all over the world. But I specifically remember when he and I played Madison Square Garden together, which was, you know, as a Knicks fan and as just as a New Yorker, I've seen so many Knicks games and so many concerts and events there over the years, that, you know, that was a really special night. But to your point, yeah, like this is just a guy that Jim and I started doing open mics. I remember we would play Hamburger Harry's on 46th Street. It was the back of a hamburger restaurant. This woman named Gladys had a show, and you would go, and I think you had to pay a few bucks, and you would get a drink or whatever, and you get 5 minutes, you know? So Jim and I used to do Hamburger Harry's together, and then, you know, there we are at Madison Square Garden. So, yeah, it is a bizarre ride for sure.
That's awesome. Favorite, two more here. Favorite live concert you've ever seen?
You know, it's funny because my mind flashed to just before I played Madison Square Garden, like maybe 2 weeks before, within the month, let's say, Stevie Wonder was there. And I went to see Stevie Wonder with some family and friends. And, I mean, I love, you know, how could you not love Stevie Wonder? But it was even better than what I expected. He was playing Songs in the Key of Life. He did a tour where he played the whole album, Songs in the Key of Life. And then, of course, he did an encore where he played like greatest hits and everything. But yeah, man, like just his connection to the whole arena and the audience and his vibe, and that album is so great. Yeah, so that's the one that flashed into my mind.
That's a great answer. Last question. If you were a Major League Baseball player, Ted Alexandro, coming to the plate, what would your walkout song be?
Oh, man, that's a great question.
Or you could be the 10th man coming off the Knicks bench, because you probably could make that roster right about now too.
Thank you. I like to think that actually. What would my walk-up music be? Gosh, man, how about it's not even a song I like, but it's just I want to get people ready for the possibility that something might happen. What's that? Y'all ready to something? Y'all ready to
There you go. Y'all ready Jock to, Jams or something? Something yeah. On ESPN, yeah.
Yeah, Jock Jams, so that they, you know, they're ready for whatever that song asks them if they're ready for.
This is a game that we play with my kids, so they're very excited. He has like Little John, and it's explicit, but you know, I allow it for the moment. Fun yeah. things you have to look forward to, Ted.
Yeah, man. Can't wait.
All right, Ted. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for being on the Dad the Best I Can podcast. Tell people where they can find your stuff.
Thanks a lot, Rob. I had fun too. People can find me at Ted Alexandro on social media. And of course, the Ted Alexandro Show is on my YouTube channel every week.
Yeah, I've been watching the YouTube earlier. You got some great, great clips, great guest appearances, a lot of good stuff. Everybody go check out Ted. All right, Ted, thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rob.